I want to begin by reading the entirety of Psalm 23. It is one of the most familiar texts in the entire Bible. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you're with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely, goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. This 3,000-year-old psalm in our culture is often associated with funerals, and rightly so. For example, if you watch about any English-speaking movie that depicts a funeral, more likely than not, everyone's going to be wearing black, and the officiant is going to be quoting Psalm 23. Now, Psalm 23, like I said, is appropriate at that time, particularly for those of us who are grieving, and I've used it, reading it, preaching it many times at funerals. But I think we tend to wrongly associate this psalm as a poem for those who are dying, when it's actually a psalm for those who are living. In the psalm, David says he's in the valley of the shadow of death. That means in the darkest valley he could possibly be in. He says he's in the presence of his enemies. David reigned as king in Jerusalem about 1,000 BC, so that's about 3,000 years ago. God had promised David that one of his descendants would reign forever as king over the entire world. And as predicted, one of David's ancestors, David's most famous ancestor, the most famous individual who's ever walked planet Earth, was Jesus of Nazareth. God become man, crucified, risen, and he has promised to return soon. Jesus, come soon, come today. We're not quite sure exactly what situation David was in 3,000 years ago as he was writing the psalm, but we know that his life was threatened. He was in the darkest valley in the presence of his enemies. Many people suggest, and I tend to agree, that it seems that this is probably written when David's son Absalom, his rebellious son, had set himself up as king in Jerusalem to try to overthrow David, his father's rule. And David was forced to flee Jerusalem and run into the hill country of Judea. And he was forced to hide from Absalom as his son and his son's entire military was in hot pursuit. Again, we don't know that that's the exact situation, but it could give you an idea of the context in which the psalm was written. We know that David was in a situation in which he was exhausted. He was spiritually prone to fear and to despair. And what is incredibly remarkable about this song is that David does not say things like this: God, I'm tired. God, I'm afraid. God, I'm hopeless. I've lost all hope. Now, to be clear, there are times in other songs when David says those exact words. What's remarkable about this song, and it shows us what should be part of every one of our struggles, is that David says, amazingly, I lack nothing. David says, God, you're my shepherd. I shall not want. I have everything I need, is the way one translation puts it. Every one of us in this room needs the experience of this psalm and needs it today. What kind of valley are you in? What kind of enemies are surrounding you right now? You need this psalm so that you can live rightly, so that you can live well, so that you can face day-to-day trials, not only saying, God, help, but also saying, God, you're all I need. The main point of Psalm 23 I would put like this: the shepherd can fully satisfy every one of his suffering sheep. Psalm 23 teaches us that the shepherd, the Lord, can fully satisfy every one of his suffering sheep. You know that whatever facade we project, and most of us often project a very solid, got it all together kind of facade. We don't like people to see the chinks in our armor. No matter what we project to other people, we are remarkably vulnerable. Remarkably vulnerable. The psalm likens us to sheep. And sheep, from some analyses, are pretty smart creatures. And yet, sheep are very easy to frighten. And they are very prone to helplessness in challenging situations. David himself had been a shepherd, and he knew how threatened sheep would be at the sight of a lion or a bear in the distance. It doesn't take too much imagination for any of us to think about one or two relatively small changes that could happen in the next few hours that would expose our vulnerability and make us feel horribly threatened, hopeless, and afraid. You could experience a pain in the chest. What if you don't get sleep tonight? It could ruin your week. Get a call from a family member breaking some bad news. A close friendship breaks down. A car won't start. You get a pink slip at work. Or you give in to sin that you haven't given into for 10 years. Any one of those things could happen. And this facade, I've got it all together, shatters. None of these would actually be major changes, right? In the grand scheme of things, it wouldn't even make a newspaper headline. Could totally undo your world, expose your vulnerability, and they could leave you fumbling like, where is my security? Am I ever going to be at rest again? Psalm 23 describes the only way. When you are feeling vulnerable, threatened, despairing, the only way you can actually experience satisfaction as you suffer. It's incredible. David's famous song here, Psalm 23, offers four ways in which the Lord shepherds us, shepherds his sheep, and shepherds David personally. Even though David's suffering, these are four ways that God shepherds him so that David can conclude, I lack nothing. I'm going to explain each of these four ways with just a little bit of application, and then I'm going to conclude with a focus on Jesus. The first way our shepherd satisfies us when we're suffering is he revives us. Your shepherd revives you with rest and food. Do you notice how the two statements in verse 2 add together to equal the first statement of verse 3? The first statement of verse 2, my shepherd makes me rest, or he forces me, he compels me to rest. And second statement, my shepherd feeds me. Grass and water would be food for sheep. Those two statements, add them together and it equals first statement of verse 3. That's how he revives me. That's how he restores my strength. And when he talks about restoring my soul, he's talking about his entire person. So what's wrapped up here is not just physical rest and physical food, but also spiritual rest and spiritual food. And David refers to rest and food in both physical and spiritual terms throughout the Psalms. So this passage is saying that when you're weary, your shepherd knows how to give you rest and refreshment so that you can say your whole person has had its strength restored. I want to just offer a few examples for how God has done this for me over the last 20 years or so. earlier this week, I just spent some time meditating on maybe a dozen ways in which the Lord has done this in my life, and I'm just going to offer three or four. April 2008 was one of the toughest pastoral seasons I've ever endured. That winter, as all of you know from our orientation class, that winter we said goodbye to about 30 people. It's very, very difficult. That April, didn't know what the winter would be like, but I had planned to go to Kentucky, where I was going to meet with my dad and my brother, and we were going to attend a pastor's conference. They were going to come with me. While we were there at that conference, one of the last messages was on how pastors experience the fellowship of Jesus in his sufferings. And after that message, we sang In Christ Alone. And forever, I will remember singing, no power of hell, no scheme of man can ever pluck me from his hand till he returns or calls me home. Here in the power of Christ, I'll stand. God fed me at one of the lowest of times. I didn't know when I had set things up for that conference and we had made plans as a family to meet there, what situation I would be in, that I would need a couple days break and to be fed personally. But my shepherd knew. He knew when I was weary, and he fed me. The second hardest season of ministry I've ever faced was when we were in the pastoral transition of 2012. I have never forgotten how God worked in my life. The most intense week of that year was when the transition became decisive. The same weekend, there was a wedding of a very close friend, and we were hosting that weekend three out-of-town guests. Two of them were missionaries. It was the most challenging week of the most challenging year I've ever been through. And do you know what my shepherd did for me? He gave me appendicitis. God put me flat on my back with appendicitis. I went into the hospital on Friday with an intense fever that wouldn't go down. By Saturday morning, I was under the surgical knife having an emergency appendectomy. And the entire next week, I was on my sofa, and we welcomed one of the missionary families into our home while I was in my pajamas. My shepherd humbled me and compelled me to rest. Fast forward 6 months, winter of 2013. I was beginning 18 months that I knew I would be the solo paid pastor, the solo staff pastor here at Tri-County. I knew that they would be tough. Hannah and I had had numerous conversations basically saying, I'm going to be working essentially an extra day or two a week, and it's going to be very challenging, but it's going to end. After about a year, year and a half, I know it's going to end. And in the winter of 2013, Johnny and Mark, who were the only other elders with me at the time, came to me and said, Joe, we want to meet with you every Thursday night for 1 hour. We do not want you to prepare an agenda that would add more to your schedule. We just want you to come to that meeting and tell us what burdens you're carrying so that we can spend time praying with you. You need to know that you're not carrying these burdens alone. And Hannah has told several people over the past several years, the reason Joe is still pastoring today is because of how Johnny and Mark supported him during those 18 months. My shepherd gave me restored strength through the rest that praying with friends gave. Number four, the Sunday after Hannah and I said goodbye to some of our closest friends, we sang the song, the same song we sang just a few minutes ago, Mercies Anew. We sang, when the storms swirl and rage, there are mercies anew. In affliction and pain, you will carry me through. And I will never forget that hardest of weeks when we said goodbye to some of our closest friends, singing those words in the congregation of God's people was something that God used to Seal those promises. Assure me of those promises. Give me faith in those promises and help me to rest in those promises. This is what he does for his sheep when we're weary. It's what the shepherd does. Now, Christian, I'd encourage you maybe to do what I've done this past week and take maybe an hour or two in the next week or two and just follow my example. Write out a page or two answering this question. How have I seen my shepherd give me rest and food when I've been most weary? I think one of the things that you'll find is that he most often uses very normal methods, like regular Bible teaching, relationships with brothers and sisters in the church. Our shepherd knows how to revive his sheep. Secondly, your shepherd leads you, especially when you stray. Your shepherd leads you. The psalm actually says in verse 3b, the end of the verse, that you can be certain your shepherd will keep you from straying off the right path because his name is at stake. His reputation is at stake. It's incredible. Our shepherd is going to make sure that we get back on the path because his name is at stake in us. God shepherded David like this when David was in the worst sin of his life. David, the king, stayed home from battle. He committed adultery with the wife of one of his elite soldiers. And then he treacherously asked his military general to put that elite soldier into a predicament in which he'd almost certainly die. You can read all about the gross details in 2 Samuel 11. But what's remarkable is that when you come to the end of 2 Samuel 11, God didn't let the king get away with it. God sent Nathan after him. He sent Nathan after him to put his finger in David's face and say, David, get back on the path. You've strayed. You're one of God's sheep. Get back on the path. Deal with your sin. And this is what God does with all of his sheep. He goes after the straying sheep. He uses several methods. Again, they're very normal methods, like Christian friends, or the Spirit's work on our conscience, or the discipline of trials. God can put a believer or a pastor in front of us, just like he put Nathan in front of David. And that individual, that believer, says, you're straying. Get back on the path. Praise God if you get caught in your sin. There have been so many times in my life that my parents or one of my siblings or a Christian friend has caught me and called me out. And that is my shepherd. That is my shepherd getting me back on the path when I stray. God also allows his Spirit, which is within us, to be grieved when we sin. And sometimes we just experience this intense burden of our conscience. I've got to confess the sin. I've got to seek forgiveness. I've got to get right with God. Sometimes God allows his sheep to live for a little while outside the safety of the pen. Okay, you want to stray? I'm going to let you learn the hard way. Sometimes God lets us live out there for 5 hours. Sometimes God lets us live out there for 5 months. Some of you can testify that God lets us live out there for 5 years until he helps us see through hard experience that living in sin is miserable. It's empty. It's hard. And your shepherd uses trials to say, get back on the path. He teaches you through that what feels like abandonment. Just going to let you roam for a little bit. He teaches you through that to say, it's just not worth it. I need to go back to the Lord. He brings us back when we wander. And one of the ways that you can be assured that you belong to the shepherd is that he's done this many times in your life. David had experienced it many times in his life, so he could say, "My shepherd leads me especially when I stray. So in this trial, I've got everything I need." Third, your shepherd comforts you with his presence. This is verse 4. Your shepherd comforts you with his presence. When you're going through the darkest times in life, your shepherd just says, "I'm with you." He assures you of various promises, and I'm just going to quote several from the scriptures. "Where can I go to escape your presence, God?" That's Psalm 139. "Can I even escape from you if I tried?" Or Isaiah 41, "Fear not," the Lord says, "I'm with you." Jesus promised, "Behold, I'm with you always, to the very end of the age." Or the writer to the Hebrews quotes in chapter 13, verse 6, "He has said," God has said, "I will never leave you, nor will I ever forsake you." When we're in the darkest valley, the promises of God's presence assure us. They assure us that God is there, that God is with us, and that we who've trusted him will be ultimately safe. These promises are actually like a rod. Imagine yourself like a sheep, and you're walking down a path, and it's so dark outside, and you hear something in the distance. That was the shepherd's rod. There was an attack, a threat. There was a rod, and he dealt with it. The psalmist says that that's what these promises are like. "I'm with you. Don't fear. I'll always be with you. There's nothing you can do, nowhere you can go to escape my presence." These are like the rod that God uses to fend off enemies. Sometimes you're aware of them, sometimes you're not. In the darkest valley, these promises of God's presence are like a rod. And then the psalmist also says that God's staff assures you he's there. His staff. We talked about those in the first two points, didn't we? God puts his staff down and says, "Stop, take a break, you need sleep." God puts his staff down and says, "Get back up on the path." You hear the rod in the darkness. You feel the staff in the darkness, and you know your shepherd's with you. That's where you can say, "God, I know that I've got all I need." Fourth and finally, your shepherd blesses you both now and forever. This is verses 5 and 6, the last movement of the song. Your shepherd blesses you both now and forever. Notice verse 5. David knows that the Lord's present blessings overflow in his life, even as he's surrounded by enemies. The imagery is of a set table, an overflowing cup. It just communicates that you've set out a lavish feast in front of me, even though I'm right now in a dangerous situation. The table set before me and the cup overflowing just indicate a lavish, generous host setting out this great table and taking good care of you. The oil poured over the head signifies assurance that this individual was God's anointed, God's chosen, and would be ultimately victorious. Now, the imagery is significant. David himself had been anointed by the prophet Samuel. This is recorded in 1 Samuel 16. And Samuel assured David, even as Saul now wanted to attack David, that David was God's chosen king. And a few years later, 2 Samuel 7 records that God had made specific covenant promises to David, saying, "I will cut off all your enemies, and I will establish the reign of your descendant forever." David had these promises. David had been anointed with oil. He knew that no matter how many enemies came around him, he was God's chosen and he would ultimately be victorious. So that's why David says in verse 5, although I'm surrounded by enemies, I can look at my life and say, God, you have so richly blessed me. You've chosen me and you've assured me that I'm going to be ultimately victorious. Your present blessings surround me. Verse 6, it shifts from the present to the future. David in verse 6 says that I know that your blessings, your goodness, and your steadfast love will continue to follow me until I'm with the Lord forever. I'll never forget my intermediate Hebrew instructor, Robert Bell, challenging us to study that word follow. The Hebrew word is radaf. He said, study that word follow in verse 6. He said, look it up in your Hebrew lexicon and tell me what it means. He says, note, it doesn't simply mean follow. If you look it up in a Hebrew dictionary, it means pursue. He said, look down in the entry in the dictionary and see where else in the Bible it's used. He said, do you see that reference down there? It's used in 2 Samuel 2:19. Let's go there. Flipped over to 2 Samuel 2:19. He says, do you see it's used of Azahel, the fastest warrior in Israel's military? And Azahel kept on tracking Abner. He wanted to get Abner back for killing his brother. The scriptures say, he says, that Azahel was as swift-footed as one of the gazelles in the field. And Azahel kept pursuing Abner until he overtook him. Dr. Bell said, that's what the word follow means there in Psalm 23:6. It means pursuit until that which is pursued is overtaken. Never forgotten that. David was certain that the promised goodness of God was going to keep chasing him, keep hounding him, keep nipping at his heels until it finally overtook him. David is certain that the Lord is his shepherd, that the Lord is reviving him, that the Lord is leading him, guiding him, getting him back on the path. David is absolutely certain that the Lord is with him and that the Lord's goodness is present with him right now and assured to go with him all the way into eternity. David is certain. I wonder, this is where we conclude, can you be that certain? Can you be that certain? I mean, you've never had God come to you like he did to David and communicate verbally his covenant promises to you. You've never had God send someone else and pour oil over your head. Can you be as certain as David that the Lord is your shepherd so that you can say with David, I lack nothing even in the midst of my trials? I want to conclude by explaining how you can be certain that the Lord is your shepherd. Again, David knew that he belonged to God because his head had been anointed with oil and God had come to him through the prophet Nathan and made explicit covenant promises, assuring him that he would be victorious in life and that one of his descendants would reign on earth forever. That's why David can say in verse 6, the mercy of the Lord, the covenant-keeping love of the Lord is going to go with me all through my life. God had assured him of this. How in the world can you be as certain as David? It has everything to do with Jesus, okay? How can you be as certain as David? It has everything to do with Jesus. The covenant promises that God made to David assured him, I say it again, that one of David's descendants would be king on earth forever. The New Testament begins with the words Jesus, the genealogy of Jesus, or the lineage of Jesus, son of David, descendant of David. The New Testament everywhere identifies Jesus as David's long-awaited descendant, God's chosen king who was going to rule forever as king on earth. And in the middle of Jesus' life, he said the most incredible thing. He looked out at the Jews around him and said, "I'm the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep." Jesus, in the midst of this, says, "I've come so that you might have life and have it more abundantly, have life to the full." Of course, when Jesus made this claim to be the good shepherd, he was claiming to be God. Every Jew around him understood it clearly because every Jew knew Psalm 23, "The Lord is my shepherd," which is why they wanted to, according to John 10, verse 31, stone Jesus for blasphemy, because he was claiming to be the good shepherd and claiming to be one with God. As remarkable, Jesus said, "I'm the good shepherd who lays down his life for the sheep." He's not only claiming to be God become man, he's also claiming to have unthinkably great love. Think about it. Why do shepherds watch sheep? Well, shepherds are business people, and sheep produce wool, milk, meat, and in the Old Testament times, people would come and purchase sheep for sacrifices. The shepherd made money off of the sheep. It was unthinkable that a shepherd would ever die for sheep. A shepherd dying for sheep? But Jesus says, in essence, "My love and care for my sheep go deeper than anyone can fathom. I'm going to sacrifice my life for them. I'm not interested in using the sheep. I'm interested in loving the sheep, in restoring the sheep, in giving these sheep life and life more abundant." It's incredible. So Jesus, after saying, "I'm the shepherd," John, the same gospel, is going to stress that he dies as the lamb. The book of John, after all, opens with John the Baptist saying, "Behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world." Incredible. The shepherd's going to die as the lamb. See, anyone who follows Jesus, who said, "I'm the good shepherd, I lay my life down for the sheep, I'm the lamb who takes away the sin of the world, I'm the one who's come so that anyone who follows me will have life and have it more abundantly." Jesus has come so that anyone who follows him can be just as certain as David that God's goodness is going to follow us all through our lives and overtake us in eternity. Only requirement is that you follow him. Only requirement is that you stop your waywardness as a sheep and you say, "Jesus, would you have me? Shepherd, take me into your fold. Save me, rescue me, forgive me." Jesus is David's descendant. Jesus was anointed as God's chosen king for the planet. And Jesus was not just anointed with symbolic oil. He was anointed with the Holy Spirit at his baptism. "This is my son," the voice from heaven said. "This is my chosen king. You better follow him." So all who relate to God through Jesus are promised. They're promised. There's actually a covenant made between you and God. If you commit to following Jesus, God covenants with you. "I will forgive your sin, I will change your heart, and I will be your God forever." So if you have committed your life to Jesus, you can have the same confidence as David. Let me word it in one other passage. It's a passage that James Barnes clearly explained a few years back as he preached Isaiah 55. It's Isaiah 55, 3. God says, "To everyone who would turn from his or her waywardness and submit themselves to his servant, his chosen king, he says, I will make with you an everlasting covenant, my steadfast, sure love for David." If you turn from your sin, your waywardness, and submit to God's plan, his chosen king, God says, I will give you all the mercies and unfailing love that I promised David. You hear that? God's unfailing love that David said, I know it's with me now, I know it's going to go with me forever. God says, that will be yours if you submit to my chosen king, if you trust me. So if you've committed your life to Jesus, you can say, God is my shepherd. No matter what your present sufferings right now, you can say, I know that my shepherd revives me, he leads me, he comforts me, and he blesses me now and forever. Christian, this psalm should change our lives, but can I show you something really incredible about the psalm? It doesn't have one command in it. It's just saying, this is your shepherd. He's going to do this for you. You lack nothing. Because of Jesus, you can be certain that God's goodness is going to keep chasing you. It's going to keep hounding you, going to keep nipping at your heels until it finally overtakes you. If you're a Christian, you know that someday the words of Revelation 7 that we quoted earlier in the service are going to come to pass. Every tear is going to be wiped from your eyes. And you're going to dwell forever in the presence of the enthroned Lamb who is your shepherd. So no matter what your life circumstances look like right now this morning, I hope as you're crying out for help, you also have times where you say, the Lord is my shepherd. I have everything I need.